Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
My debut book, Manifest, 7 Steps to Living Your Best Life, is out now, and you can order it from Amazon, Waterstones, or any other major bookshop. In this book, you will learn absolutely everything that you need to know about manifestation. You will understand that it really is a self-development practice to live by, to empower yourself, to step into your light, to become the best version of yourself that exists, and to attract anything you want into your life. I cannot wait for you all to read it. And if you love it, please don't forget to rate and review on Amazon, Audible, or wherever you purchased it from. Thank you so much and happy manifesting. Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Moments That Made Me with me, your host, Roxy Nafusi. Today, I am joined by the absolutely delightful Kagi Dunlop. Kagi is host of podcast Saturn Returns and soon to be author and someone that I met in Bougie Nightclub when I was 16. So we have known each other a very long time. Kagi, thank you so much for coming on the show, my love.
Oh, thank you very much for having me and for that introduction.
How are you?
I'm good. I think... yeah, I'm just, there's a lot going on right now in the world and collective shifts happening with that. Mm. But, you know, I'm keeping on.
Good. So I don't know if you've heard the podcast before, but basically what we do is dive straight in to the first defining moment.
Okay, let's do it.
I'm like, what's it going to be?
I've been thinking about it. It's so hard because it's such a hard one to think back of, but I'm just going to go with the ones that I've kind of thought of that have come to mind. But a really defining moment for me, and I'll explain why, was I moved to LA when I was 27 and I went through this very big shift there, and that, you know, that's kind of how I came up with the idea of Saturn Returns and to do what I'm doing now. And when I started recording music, so I was working in music out there, and I became such a perfectionist about it and so ruled by fear that I just couldn't release it, and I was just so scared. And I got myself into just like such an awful headspace because of that, that I became a bit like paralyzed by that fear. Mm-hmm. And so a really key moment for me was when I came back to London and I decided to just put out some music just on my own and with like no label or no team or anything like that. Because, and that was such a key point for me because it represented like letting go a little bit and kind of trusting that, you know, things were going to be okay. And so when I released this song called Here We Are Again, it had this response from people that felt so incredible and I felt so supported in it. And I remember at the time I was in Italy with my brother. And so I'd gone away for the music release, which in itself was kind of ridiculous. But I guess I was running away from the possibility of it being ridiculed. And he said to me on a walk, he was like, what do you want to happen? Like, what's your goal with this? And I said, my dream would be for it to be on New Music Friday, which in, you know, music is kind of like a chart system for new artists. And I came home, or came back to the hotel, and someone had WhatsApped me, someone that I knew from the music industry a long time before, and he said, congratulations on New Music Friday. And it had been picked up in the US and the UK and was on New Music Friday. And it was just such a like a moment of, oh my God, maybe like this is possible, you know? It was, I was so, so happy.
Oh, I love that. And it's such a clear example of kind of, you know, really being able to sit through the discomfort of the fear and just going, no, I just have to do this. I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to do it despite feeling afraid. And the universe kind of rewarding you for that.
Yeah. And it's such a terrifying thing. So I feel like the closer we are to something and the more we love it, and you can apply this to like many contexts in life, the more resistance and the greater the fear that's going to be around it, you know. And I think we kind of trick ourselves out of doing a lot of stuff that brings us joy because we're scared of how it will be received by others.
100%. And when you say that you were in LA and you were having this kind of shift, what was that? What was happening then?
So before I moved to LA, I guess, like, you know, and we met during this time, my 20s and even early 20s and teen years were very sort of hedonistic. I was always out and about. I was clubbing, I was drinking, I was partying. I based my life on this sort of need for external validation. Like, I needed to be liked and loved by everybody in order to find some sort of feeling of belonging, I guess. And when I moved to LA, that whole sort of infrastructure started to crumble. Whenever I drank, it just really wasn't agreeing with me. And I knew that I needed to sort of abstain from alcohol and substances. And then I kind of found myself in a bit of a no man's land because I wasn't doing the things that I used to do, and the old coping mechanisms weren't working anymore. But I still didn't quite have the people or the space or the language to really find something that felt grounded. And so it was turbulent in the sense of I just felt very unanchored as a person because I kind of knew who I wasn't, and I had this desire to be my authentic self. But after, you know, almost a decade of pretend, I didn't know who that was. And LA really represents, you know, LA in itself is very vast. It's, you always are in a car going from one place to another. And so it represented this sort of void in my life in a literal and metaphorical sense of just this space of like, what is out there and how can I find it? And I think for, you know, as much as it was a great time and I met some amazing people, it was on the whole quite lonely. And I was faced with all these sort of, you know, shadow aspects of myself that I had to confront. And that was hard.
And so for someone listening that maybe doesn't know what you mean by shadow aspects, what does that mean for you?
Well, I like to kind of view things, you know, like you, I'm very into personal development, and I like to view things through the lens of astrology because for whatever reason, it's given me a deeper understanding of self, but also a way of viewing the world that feels kind of like we're all part of something, yet it's also very personal. So shadow to me is kind of like everything is in balance, like everything runs even. So we all have like our shadow aspects that we have to confront in order to work through. And if we don't, we may be, they may kind of creep up in and manifest in all kinds of ways that will hold us back in life. And I believe that during your Saturn return is like a really key moment where those things come to the forefront, and it can feel particularly challenging because of that, because it's quite intense. But it's so that you can really unearth those coping strategies, those negative toxic patterns that you've been living with in order to excel into the future. And so I guess, you know, to kind of give an example of some of the ones for me, like struggling with, you know, my sober journey was definitely a big one. My perfectionism that I didn't even realize I had until almost quite recently, this fear of letting go of not being perfect, of things that I put out into the world not being perfect, and how I would then kind of sabotage that.
I think it's really interesting with perfectionism because, and I'm really, and I feel like I haven't actually spoken to anyone on the show really about it, but I think because perfectionism is almost kind of celebrated Sometimes people say it about themselves in this way that's like, you know, I'm just a real perfectionist, as if it's this really empowering trait. Totally. But actually, when you learn about it and you understand, actually, it's so driven by fear and it's so limiting. It's kind of astounding. So could you talk a bit about your experience with perfectionism a bit more and how actually that limited you and how you've learned to kind of let it go, or if you have?
Yeah. Absolutely. And it is something that I'm definitely still working through, because like you say, perfectionism, when people go for a job interview and they have to say, you know, what are your weaknesses, or what are your, you know, everyone always says, oh, I'm a perfectionist, because that's like the positive weakness. And people really identify in the same way that we, you know, kind of glorify like busyness.
Totally.
But I never really thought I was a perfectionist, because I'm someone that's quite messy and quite chaotic, and, you know, I'm not that organized with stuff. And I associated perfectionists with people that, you know, kept their life in immaculate order. But I didn't realize that how perfect I was, a perfectionist about myself, my looks, my body, and also aspects of my career. And that was particularly in music, because I think it was something that was so personal to me, so it was an extension of self. So I guess it's really anything that I found could be judged, anything that I thought people would judge me for. So from a very young age, I absorbed this notion that in order to be loved and worthy and accepted, I had to be perfect. And that's not to say anyone directly told me that, but I think it's quite easy through the media, and just, you know, especially how women are portrayed and the expectations around them, to think that, you know, it's quite just through osmosis, you can start to have those feelings about yourself. And I also used it as a sort of a shield from the world. I think when I was about 14, I remember my parents were getting a divorce, and I was so unhappy in myself. I, you know, and that's also something that's a Saturn square. We have Saturn squares and oppositions. And so that's like a big shift in one's identity. And I remember very clearly at that moment in time thinking, I'm going to be someone else. Like, I'm going to be this perfect version of myself, or like this tapestry of me that will absolve me from the horrors of being human, of like suffering, of feeling any kind of pain. And I kind of lived my life for that way for quite a long time, actually. And what that meant was that I would constantly shapeshift. And when something felt too committed or too real, I would sort of morph and move again, because I found, you know, remaining the same too risky. And that could have been applied to career, relationships, because I was so afraid, I guess, of being truly seen, that it felt easier to sort of sail from port to port than remain grounded in one place. But to kind of go back to what you just asked, more recently, I guess perfectionism for me, you know, it's something I'm still navigating in music, and what that looks like and how I want to put that out into the world. But I think stuff around my body and how I've communicated to myself internally, and because I'm in a relationship, it's that internal critic will sort of say, if this changes about you, like, he won't love you anymore. And confronting and actually speaking that out to my partner has been really painful, because I think with any of these things, we carry a lot of shame with it. We can carry a lot of shame with it. So addressing those things kind of head on has been a process that I'm by no means out the other end of, but I'm working through.
Oh, well, thank you so much for sharing on that. You're so articulate. I love listening to you.
Thank you.
It's a great way of expressing yourself. And yeah, just thank you so much. So then what was your second defining moment?
So this is a strange one, but when I came back to London and was sort of trying to find my feet here, and was like navigating my career, and like, you know, when you've lived abroad, it's a strange thing, because you feel you've changed in every way, but everything kind of remains the same and has gone on without you. So, and I was in a relationship. I met someone and I was in a relationship and I kind of thought that that was it. Like I thought that we would get married and that was how things were going to unfold. And you can kind of see a trajectory of the future and how things will be. And I was definitely in a point with my career where something was brewing, but I didn't know exactly what. And I'd sort of conceptualized the idea of Saturn returns in LA, but I hadn't actually brought it to any kind of reality back in London or didn't really know how to. And then one sort of idle Sunday morning, I was at my boyfriend at the time's house. And I'd been getting these feelings, this sort of instinctive, intuitive feeling that something was really not right within the relationship, but there was nothing really happening on the surface. There was nothing really wrong, but it felt like a sort of deep knowing that something was. It was very hard to, it's hard to explain and hard, it was hard to understand at the time, but I ended up seeing something that morning that, you know, I was never supposed to see, that revealed that there was something deeply wrong within the relationship. And it came crumbling down in seconds. Like my whole reality, the carpet was pulled from underneath me. I was so devastated. It went from, you know, thinking I was in love and happy and going to have this you know, life with someone, to not knowing who this person was in front of me at all. And it kind of was an emotional rock bottom for sure, because it brought up all these feelings that I had battled with in the past. But I felt like it was such a moment of, you know, when we start to intellectualize and learn and understand these things of shadow work, of our, you know, toxic patterns, and we acknowledge where we've struggled and where our pain points are, I always think that the universe will then call it into action. And by that I mean it will put a situation in our path which goes, okay, you're going to react the old way.
Yeah.
And for me, it was really challenging not to go back to that default setting of I'm a victim. And I didn't this time. I was like, okay, and I trusted that somehow it was going to be happening for me, but that didn't negate the pain. And it then kind of put me on this journey of healing, of like really leaning into my spiritual path. And I ended up going to Australia for the best part of a month. And then I just went for it with Saturn Returns and the podcast and everything. And it was such a catalyst. And I always try and remind people of that. Like sometimes your most painful moments can act as such rocket fuel to allow you to go to where you're supposed to. And even though it was like one of the saddest moments, it was one of the most defining, because it made me realize that I was actually grounded in myself for the first time in my life. Like it didn't derail me in the way it would have in the past. I didn't go back to substances to kind of hide from the pain. I just handled it head on.
I feel like that happening was in a way your biggest fear of being seen and then it
and
crashed.
Being rejected. Yeah.
So in a way, that's why it makes it all the more incredible and impactful and such a great opportunity for growth, because you've kind of at this point recognized some of these things, and then you found, and I think that can often happen with self-development, you know, with this healing, and then we instantly think, oh my God, I've noticed, I've recognized it, I'm healed from it. Mm. And then it gives you then your worst fear, and you mm-hmm. and then it's what you decide to do with that really defines what happens next and defines you. And so I think it's really interesting that you, having just said that, you know, that was your fear to be seen, and then you finally commit to this relationship, you do commit, you do see a future, you do decide, look, this is where I'm going to stay, and then that happens. And I think how much stronger you are for that is just incredible.
Yeah, totally. And how, you know, easy it would be in those moments to then go, well, this is why I don't trust people. Exactly. This is why like this happens to me, like, and go into victimhood mode again. Mm. And so I think I also had experiences in, you know, my early 20s of dramatic, turbulent relationships and breakups that kind of gave me an example of what not to do. Like, I was like, okay, let's remember that one. Do everything the opposite way. And so yeah, it was like, it was healing on such a deep level, because like you said, it called me to really address those deeper fears that probably had stemmed from, you know, my family and my parents' divorce and those feelings of abandonment. And I always believe that relationships are mirrors and teachers that give us an opportunity to heal from the past.
Mm, absolutely.
Push Your Peak is a brand new podcast brought to you by Wattbike. Join me, Louise Minchin, and some of the world's most incredible sports people to learn what it takes mentally and physically to push yourself beyond your limits. Whether you're an elite or everyday athlete, it can be hard to continually progress. How do you push yourself out of your comfort zone? Where do you go to find that inner drive? Tune in to hear these inspiring stories and take away the belief that you can achieve your own goals, no matter how big or small. You can find us wherever you got this podcast. Just search Push Your Peak.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So then, what was your third defining moment?
So my third defining moment, which kind of, you know, stems from that in a way, because after that experience, I, you know, everything in my career started to fall into place. I found a group of friends that felt so aligned with me, and I felt like I truly knew who I was, and like felt really happy in myself, independent from a relationship. And then I kind of fell slightly into like, oh, well, I don't need a relationship. And I think, you know, it's a very relatable theme for women approaching their 30s or in their 30s. And bear in mind, I was already in my 30s at this time. Thinking, you know, there's a lot of pressure to find someone. And I just kind of really rebelled against that idea. And I kind of was like, oh, I don't know whether I ever want to be with anyone. And I think it's okay and good to kind of brush up against the status quo sometimes and push the boundaries to know what's truly right for you. But I realized that actually a part of it was fear of being hurt again. And being scared to put myself back out there because I got something so wrong in the past. I was like terrified of misjudging a situation again, or, you know, not seeing a person for who they truly are. And the truth is, like, it's hard to sometimes know. So the third defining moment was, you know, I'm quite a recluse. I don't go out that much. I'm not like dating apps and stuff aren't for me. So in terms of meeting someone, I definitely wasn't putting myself out there in any by any means. But in the summer, my friend Farley and I and another friend were going to Wilderness. And in the morning, it was raining. One of my friends bailed. And then I was like, actually, I don't want to go. I'm just going to stay home. I was doing this like course at the time. I was just like, I'm just going to stay and just be cozy, like I like to be as a Taurus. And anyway, my friend Farley was just not having any of it and sort of like forced. She was like, I'm just going to come over and like say goodbye before I go. Because I honestly told her about 20 times I didn't want to go. And she pretty much forced me in the car. And I was like, you always put this pressure on me. And she's like, yeah, but you sometimes need to do stuff. So anyway, we drove the whole way to Wilderness. We got out. We walked in. The first person I saw was my ex-boyfriend. So the one that I've just said I went through that traumatic breakup with. And I was like, luckily, you know, I don't carry any negative feelings towards him or anything like that. But I was just like, oh, classic, you know, the first person I see. And then we were just walking around and I was kind of not feeling it. And I was like, I think I'm going to go home. Like, that's just really unsettled me. And then Farley was like, no, we're going to stay. Like, just let's just give it the day. And I then ended up, I saw this guy from across the field that me and Farley knew. And I was like, oh, I swear that's Ollie. And so she was like, well, let's go over and say hello. And we walked over. And then standing with him was this guy called Tom, who I hadn't seen in 10 years. And we started chatting. And then we all like kind of walked off together to go and see like this act that was performing. And I just started talking with Tom, or he started talking with me. And it was just like something just locked. It was like this experience that I've never really had before. And this kind of like, this kind of energetic connection where I was like, it felt so reciprocated. But also it's strange because I think in the past I've, you know, when you have that chemistry or some with someone, it can kind of come with anxiety. But this felt very, very calm. It felt very like familiar, but also very elating as well. And we just talked, and I honestly, we were talking like absolute rubbish. It wasn't like what we were saying, but something else was communicating. And I remember because Farley was driving and we weren't actually staying there. And so eventually, you know, she was then playing the wing woman at this point because she knew that there was some kind of connection.
Yeah.
And then she was like, dude, we've got to go home. Like, I'm so tired. And so we left, but I remember just feeling so magnetic as I walked off. Aww. Like, I was like, oh my God, what was that? Mm. And then we ended up going on a date about a week later. And I'm such a sucker for a kiss. Like, I always think that a kiss tells you everything you need to know. And I think that a kiss can, sometimes people kiss you and it's like they've kissed you 1,000 times in 100 lifetimes. And it's just, aww, the best feeling. And that's what I had with him. So I would say that that's my third moment, was meeting him.
Oh my God. I'm just so smiling. Oh, it's so beautiful. And what's really funny is that I have this thing, and I say it in the book, that whenever you're about to meet your soulmate, your exes will suddenly appear in your life.
No way. Because you know, yeah, what also, Roxy's really weird is that it wasn't just that ex, it was two exes I saw. In the space, yeah, of 10 minutes,
yeah,
it was two exes. And that's why I was like, you know what, this is a joke. I'm going home.
Oh my God. It's literally what I say in the book.
Yeah, because then what happened was it started pouring with rain and we were like hiding under this massive tree, and this group of guys came over and they were on a stag do, and we just started chatting with them. And I said, I was like, I think I'm going to go home. I'm just not really feeling this. And they were like, why? You should say. And I was like, I've just bumped into two ex-boyfriends and I've been here for 10 minutes. Like, this is just not my vibe. And the guy that was actually getting married, he said, well, you know what that means, don't you? And I was like, no. And he was like, it means that your future boyfriend's here too. And I was like, it does.
No.
Like, yeah. And incredible. It was such a weird, like, crazy moment. That was and then that kind of caused me to start. I was like, wow, maybe that's true. How come you've written that in the book then?
Because I believe that you know, one of my steps is step four, overcome tests from the universe. And I believe that exes are a test. So when they come into your life, they test your self-worth to see how resilient you are to your old self or to your old triggers, because exes can bring with it this feeling of familiarity and comfort. And
even if it's familiar pain.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's really just understanding how you show up for yourself in those times when an ex enters your life in any capacity. And if you're able to kind of really, really then have let it go and let them go and let your old self go, so that you can, something new and more meant for you is able to enter your life.
Yeah.
So that's just such a beautiful story. And honestly, I feel like my heart is just, I just am so happy for you. I'm just like, oh, you so deserve it. And I just feel so like touched. And yeah, I was just so happy for you to have that love. And I think it's really beautiful to hear that you, when you say, you know, it just felt there was something calm about it.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, when we, you know, and I think me and you have had some real similarities growing up, and you reject the calm because it's the high that you want, that kind of almost like love addict behavior.
Yeah.
So
that's the thing. If you've got that addictive nature, like that, of course, spills into your romantic choices. And I was someone that, you know, craved those kind of extremes, those sort of toxic extremes. That was all I really knew. And I think also by doing the work on myself, I think, because it is like the love I have is definitely extreme, but it's really rooted, as opposed to like feeling flighty or it just feels
that's
very
such
grounded.
A good way of describing it. And how is your relationship with alcohol and stuff now? Do you drink?
Well, I sort of resonate with the term sober curious, and that's because I think for me is some, you know, it kind of ties into my perfectionism. So whenever I tried to be like go totally sober, I felt like I was always setting myself up for failure. And also I'm not someone that is in AA or that if I have one drink, I'll have 20. But that being said, I drink like so rarely because it just doesn't agree with me. And I often have these dreams about it that I feel is my subconscious just reminding me that it's just not.
Well, yeah, user dreams. I get them all the time.
Do you?
I used to get them all the time. I've actually, now that I'm saying it out loud, haven't had one in ages.
What, yet, user dreams?
User dreams, yeah.
What talk to me, because I've never, like, no one's ever explained these to me, but I have them a lot.
Well, I don't really know, other than that it's a really common thing that after you've kind of
given something up.
I used to have it with smoking all the time, or like, this is fucking lame, but when I used to be obsessed with my dieting, like I would dream about eating. I don't do that anymore. But you have dreams about doing drugs, and you'll wake up and you'll be like, thank God. Or if you've just given up smoking, you've smoked a pack of cigarettes and you're like, oh, thank God it was a dream. I don't know what
this is. The thing. It's like the anxiety I get the next day. Yeah, that these dreams, it's that I basically wake up and I am sort of realizing that I'd gone out and I've drunk and I've sort of ruined my life.
Yeah.
But now it's kind of evolved, and that it's, the fear is that I've ruined something in my relationship or specifically with someone I work with. So it's more personalized, but it's really interesting. I think it's my subconscious just reminding me this isn't for you.
Yeah. And also just that it still needs to be processed. I do think with things like when you've given up booze or nights out or stuff like that, whatever, I think that you don't understand, you forget that all those, you know, that kind of severe shame you get the next day, the guilt, regret, it's actually just like lots of mini traumas. And I think that often we don't process them. We're like, we give up and then that's it. But we actually don't process it because it's self-inflicted. We don't give us feel self-inflicted. We don't give ourselves the time to actually go, actually, that was really painful and I need to just like process it and let it go and give myself compassion for that old me. And so maybe that's a
really
sign
true.
To do more of that.
Yeah, that's very true.
Well, Kagi, I have literally loved talking to you. And looking back at kind of those 20s, and those are really tough, challenging years. I mean, I would never fucking do them again. Don't know about you. But what would, in hindsight, you know, and this, everything we do, me, you, you know, anyone in this industry is really to help, hopefully, those people younger than us as well, not to make those, or maybe just to ease that pain of those years. What would your advice be to those younger people or to your younger self?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because everyone obviously has such a different relationship to their 20s, but mine, I wouldn't want to do again, even though they were fun and filled with a lot of amazing memories. But especially towards the latter part of them, I felt so burdened in such an unnecessary way. And that sort of backpack of opinions really came off when I went into my 30s, and I felt so much lighter. So my advice, like, to sort of simplify it, would be, I believe the only wrong step is not taking one. And that's from someone who experienced that sort of paralysis analysis, where I actually was so scared of failing that I remained motionless, and that then caused me so much more heartache than it would have had I just tried at the things I wanted to do. I think it's Brené Brown describes it as, like, it's better to have short-term disappointment than long-term regret. And I think that that is so true. And I think we put far too much pressure on ourselves in our 20s to have it all figured out, when it's really just a decade of discovery and rediscovery. And we need those experiences and mistakes. And we need to kind of rub up against the edges of who we aren't to discover who we are. So I would say,
beautiful.
Yeah, I would say just to kind of be a bit more compassionate and go easier on yourself. I know that's a lot easier said than done.
No,
but there's definitely, there's, and I'm sure you felt it as well, but there's definitely something that happens when you arrive at your 30s that you just kind of have this sigh of relief, and you're like, oh wow, this is,
yeah,
I didn't need to feel that way. And actually there's just a freshness about it that feels very empowering and liberating.
Yeah, totally. Oh, Gaggy, I love you. You're amazing.
Thank you, my love.
Okay, what is your most memorable book?
So there's a book that I read when I was younger. I haven't read it for a really long time, but it's called The Wizard of Earthsea. And that's something that it's always stayed with me, because in essence, it's about someone that's kind of trying to outrun their own shadow. And I feel that that was something that I spent my 20s trying to do. So that's definitely
love
one.
That. What is your favorite quote?
My favorite quote is a quote from Kant, and it's, two things fill the mind with ever new and increasing admiration and awe. The more often and steadily we reflect upon them, the starry heavens above me and the moral law within.
Wow, beautiful. Where did you find that?
It's just something that I read in philosophy, but it kind of, like, I'm always reminded of it with the work that I'm doing in Saturn Returns in astrology, because it's kind of about the dance between the two worlds, the external and the internal.
Love it. What is your go-to feel-good film?
True Romance.
Oh,
True
yes.
Romance or Practical Magic.
Oh, I've not seen Practical Magic.
Oh my God, Roxy, you're going to love it. It's Nicole Kidman.
Oh, I love her.
And Sandra Bullock, and it's about witches. It's incredible.
Oh my God.
It's like a real 90s classic, I think.
Most influential mentor.
There's a man called Denzel, who I was introduced to in the music industry a couple of years ago, who really helped guide me with kind of my career and where I wanted to go, and has been very supportive for me when I'm handling, like, business conversations and how to navigate things from, like, a spiritual standpoint, but also be businessy, which, as I'm sure, I think we've talked about it as well, can be quite challenging.
Yeah. Totally.
So Denzel's been quite influential, yeah.
A moment where you felt most proud?
I'd say recently when I did my Saturn Returns tour, we had a show in London, and it was just, I think, meeting everyone after and having that experience of, like, hugging everybody and hearing about their stories and why they've connected to the podcast was, like, such a humbling, amazing moment.
Oh, I love that. Top tip for dealing with stress.
Stay away from caffeine. stay away from alcohol. And I'm a big believer in getting out in nature and just going for a long walk when you're feeling stressed, and being in nature.
Definitely. A song that cheers you up.
I'm really enjoying this song at the moment, and it's because it was played on Euphoria, and I was like, oh my God. And I feel like everyone's
best. That must be the best show of all time.
Oh my God, it's so good. But it's Jerry Rafferty, Right Down the Line. So I'm like, I'm playing that quite a lot at the moment to have a dance around.
Mm. And the last question is, who is the first person you call to share good news?
It's a tie. It's a tie between my mum and my boyfriend.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Gangi, you have been such an amazing guest. Thank you so, so much
for coming on
and sharing so vulnerably and openly. And yeah, I just love listening to you, and I've loved speaking to you. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Roxy.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.